This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mayfair Witches, episode 4 is over, but we are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. My name is Grace. Of course, I'm not alone. I'm here with my co-host, DM Philly. Philly, how you doing?
I'm good. My living room appears to be raging in flames, Grace.
Oh, no.
I'm good.
That was me trying to summon the Lord to protect you.
It'll happen sometimes. You start chanting in Latin. You're never quite sure what's going to come out the other end.
Yeah, that's right. All right, so episode 4 of Mayfair Witches, Curiouser and Curiouser. I said it properly, so kudos to me. Mostly centering around the funeral for Deirdre and Rowan officially sort of meeting the family. This is a family where, I mean, they all have secrets, but also nobody can keep a secret, I feel like. I feel like in this episode, as per usual, I come in a little bit colder. I think Interview with the Vampire really messed us up, Rich, because that show was so friggin' good. And this one has been less good. And so I'm always like, yeah, that wasn't as good as Interview, which is an unfair thing for me to put a show up against. But this is mostly about, yeah, and I guess to my point, episode 4 is really about Rowan now having a bunch of this information that she's come with. Now she's in New Orleans. She's meeting the family like officially and having interactions and full on conversations, and they're telling her information. She's like in it. And it's like, yeah, this is halfway through the first season that this is happening, which is, I think, a little bit of my, like, I think there's been a pacing issue to a degree for me, but there is stuff in here, again, to the point of, like, I think that this show does a pretty good job of, like, I see why they wanted to make it into a show, Rich, because I do think the stuff we're, like, finding out, like, on paper is very interesting and good, and there's it's compelling. Something is not, for me, translating perfectly onto the screen would be my takeaway after episode 4. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm with you. It's like we've got the spell book and we're reading the incantations out of it, but we can't quite achieve the magic. I had a very similar sort of take from episode 4. I was really excited. Curiouser and Curiouser. You give me an Alice in Wonderland reference and I get fired up, Grace.
Yeah.
And we were talking a bit before we hit record where I think it's a bit of a tale of two shows in that it's tough to have to go up against something as good as Interview was, especially a new season, like huge adaptation changes, and it was a really good show. So the comparison is The Theft of Joy, right? I feel bad like pulling it back to that, but I think as we got towards the end of episode 1 of Interview, no spoilers, we had like a stinger of a moment that we closed out on that felt similar to where we end episode 4, but it just was better. It's scarier, it's more powerful, it was like done in kind of bigger sensation, and I'm with you that I feel like there's a pacing issue that we're sort of halfway through the season and only just beginning to get her interaction with the rest of the family, the kind of like deeper engagement there. But there's a lack of like character to the characters, Grace. I feel like some of them are so thin and I don't have a lot of depth of their motivation. Even Rowan herself as like the main character, like we know things about her, but I don't necessarily know like what's driving her or how she really feels about any of this kind of stuff. You know, I felt like a lot of this episode was Alexandra Daddario like walking around with this kind of shell-shocked expression on her face as she prowled through the house. And like, yeah, I don't know. This one I'm definitely lowest on out of the 4 so far,
which, you know, we we did get a little bit of that's not where we meet her. She's like a very confident individual, right? Like her in the bar and her at work, like she, you know, and she can sort of also play the game in a sense, like the sounds bad calling it a game, but like the patriarchy of her talking with her assistant in episode one and being like, listen, this is how it is now. When I get when that guy's gone, I get promoted and you get promoted into my job, like we'll make it different, you know? So there's a way in which like she's very capable. And then it's kind of like resetting, which is fine, except it's taken a long time, I think, for like us to get at least partially back to where we are. I don't know. Like I'm intrigued. I want to know the answers to many of these things. I want to understand. And I do feel like, unfortunately, I think also at the same time, we were theorizing on the Cortland versus Carlotta of it all and whether they were actually against each other. Who was sort of on what side and for what reason. And I feel like through this episode, what we ultimately get is sort of the most basic explanation of what's happening to a degree that we're sort of like extremely spot on with our guests, except for maybe that like Carlotta is extremely religious. Mm-hmm. But everything else seems sort of, which I don't want the show to try and like, this is a very risky line to walk. It's a tightrope that if it's too out of the blue, like if the twist doesn't make any sense, I don't want that. But I also felt like this was just, I thought for what they left behind the curtain, when they pulled back the curtain, I was like, oh, it took a really long time to open the curtain, if that makes sense. Like what we end up kind of learning is that like, yeah, it does seem to be that like Cortland is in agreement with Lasher. Carlotta is not. That's essentially it. Yeah.
Yeah. I talk about all the time, Grace, that like telegraphing your storytelling is not a bad thing. Knowing what's coming doesn't have to rob the power from the moment, right? Mm-hmm. That ideally knowing what's coming and like being able to telegraph that thing well creates this experience for the audience where they are more excited watching it play out, that they feel like validated, they feel justified in watching as closely as they are. It like keeps you invested in the details, right? And this was just like a little bit flat, which I think is where a lot of the characters are landing for me. There's just not a ton of like compelling kind of energy there, right? It felt like a little bit of like a Cold War, and it's fine that it was exactly what we thought it was, but there we didn't get any real exciting narrative conflict out of that so far, right? It didn't like delve in or blossom into anything really exciting or interesting going forward.
Yeah. So just before we sort of dive in a little bit further, just a reminder, PosterRecaps.com/Mayfair is how to get subscribed to our feed. So yeah, we do open up with like Rowan and Cyprian. Rowan is staying at Cyprian's house. What do you make of this? It feels like this is a bit of a, you know, there's some romance here. There's some sparks. She's certainly dreaming about him, and then he transforms into Lasher and she wakes up in a cold sweat. But I guess I'm skipping over another previous flashback. I guess I am getting a little bit ahead of myself. We do essentially get the scene from The Witch.
I know.
Not to spoil the end of The Witch. But we do get a similar scene in that movie. So we do get it a little bit. Yeah.
Grace, do you think this show would have been served to go with a like House of the Dragon style? Mm. Episodes one and two are full on like kind of prequel set in the 1600s. Let's establish like the old lore of the family. And then like episode three, shift gears. And like, here's Dr. Rowan Fielding.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like that's a very unique thing that House of the Dragon did, which was essentially say like to the stars of their show, you have to wait 4 episodes to be on the show. So I don't know that every network is going to have like the guts to do it to a degree, but it would have been really cool.
Yeah, I just feel like there is something there, but like we're not getting enough to like satiate my appetite for the previously on Mayfair witches in like the opening intro, right? And then the whole dream that she's having here, she's like having this dream, she's in bed with Cyprian, and I was very thrown. I don't know how you felt, but like immediately I was like, oh my God, this escalated quickly.
Yeah,
like here
we
go.
I thought it was real. Yeah. Other than that, she's wearing the necklace. So I guess I wasn't fully completely. Yeah. Like I was like, yeah, I don't think she has the necklace. So yeah, although the necklace thing, we'll get to why that annoys me later. So he's agreeing to go to the service like with her. He's gonna like, you know, he'll be there, and then, you know, they won't hang out long, of course, and he'll definitely be able to stay the whole time. He won't have to leave her. They'll go to the service. This was disgusting. Carlotta goes to the basement only to see if the necklace is still on Delphine's dead body. She puts on gloves and then like takes them off. Like, well, that's what a bummer. To leave Delphine in the basement.
I was so curious about this scene. She's coming down with like the bright yellow Rubbermaid kitchen gloves, you know, and I'm like, are they going to move this body? Like, these two women do not seem necessarily like the strongest physical women that they're going to like manhandle this body out of the basement. But yeah, they're like, let's check on the necklace is gone. The necklace is gone.
Take off the gloves. Yeah.
Do you think this is going to be like a running joke going forward? Those like Delphine's body in the basement. Just in the basement. This is a thing that like I've definitely I want to track.
Well, they have the party there later, I know. Right?
Yes. Yeah,
nobody's like, what's that smell?
I know. It seems like this will prove to be an issue sooner than later.
Yeah. We also do meet in this episode, very excitingly for me, the wonderful Jen Richards playing Josephine, who turns out to be Cortland's daughter. I was not expecting this. I did not, because she's not listed as a Mayfair. And I guess technically if she, it doesn't seem like she's married or anything, but could have a different last name. But what'd you make of Josephine?
She's interesting. I love that we are making this relationship more complex, right? The idea that like Cortland was giving the dresses to Deirdre when she was young, and then he has his own daughter, and like, why isn't his own daughter kind of like, in line here for Lasher, and like that sort of, that's an interesting thing.
Because he knows how bad it is to be Lasher, I think. Right? Is that the answer?
It should be the answer. Yes, it should be the answer. Yes.
Yeah, sacrifice your niece, not your daughter. I think that tracks. Yeah.
I guess
it does also. I think the other thing too we'll get later is that like there is a line of succession to a degree, right? The designee who will meet, and so Josephine is not the designee. So, and the other thing, I don't know if this is brought up in the show, but Jen Richards is a trans actress. And so I wonder, I'm all for if the show is just like never mentions it once, just a thing for us to know that Jen Richards is trans. But there could be some interesting stuff about like, you know, of someone who like always, you know, thinks that they're, you know, because like, you know, trans women or women their whole life is just like you like whatever. So like, whether Cortland ever thought like she wouldn't be a witch because like she grew up as a boy, you know?
Interesting. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know if that's going to be, I don't know if they're going to touch on that at all. And honestly, like, I don't necessarily know if I need them to, but it could be interesting.
What do you know her from previously, Grace?
She's just been in a bunch of, I mean, honestly, I know her because she's a trans actress.
Cool. Yeah. That's super cool. It is interesting to wonder if like that gets explored or at all in the idea of like a family where that's matriarchal in power, right? This is like atypical that it's like a kind of matriarchal leadership. And there's this sort of like reverence for the women, especially in like Western American culture, right? So it could be really interesting story point, but also like super cool if we just don't acknowledge it and like they just get to play the role, right?
Yeah. I know Jen Richards was in a bunch of the I Am Kate, which is the Caitlyn Jenner document, as part of sort of the group of like trans women that were involved in the show in terms of like having other points of view other than just Caitlyn Jenner, which I think was important for that show. And then was in this online drama series called Her Story, which was very good. And then has like sort of just like, I don't think has had a super leading role in a bunch of stuff, but recently was in Tales of the City, which is like plays the younger version of Anna Madrigal in that. So she's been in a bunch of stuff, but normally has like these. And then she was also in the Disclosure. If people haven't watched the Netflix documentary, which also includes a friend of the pod, Zeke. Disclosure is about trans lives on screen. It's very good. And Jen Richards is in that as well. So they're going to, Cortland cuts off a lock of Deirdre's hair, Rich, at the from her casket. He also puts a thing in her shirt. I don't understand. I don't understand this. I don't understand what's happening.
yeah, this feels like just weird magic stuff, right? The whole notion of taking somebody's hair, a lock of their hair, personal possessions, there's all kinds of associated kind of lore and mythology around working magic with stuff like that, burning your toenails, all this kind of stuff, or your fingernails. Like the slipping something in there, I really wonder about. And I wonder if it's like I'm thinking in weird, like zombie lines because of other properties that are around in my life. But is there something that like needs to get buried with her to retain some kind of like connection there? Is
that's just trying to
like get rid of something? But it feels like it's like a magic thing to the dead body in New Orleans, of all places, like the city of the dead here, right?
That's what I thought as well.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Meanwhile, there's going to be this like man that Cyprian, they catch him. He's sort of like seemingly possessed, although I guess the Cyprian's boss is like, yeah, we don't, that's a controversial term. But this man who seemingly is the one who killed Deirdre, they catch him. Did you recognize the like head honcho of with Talamanca? Is that the thing? Did you recognize this guy?
Oh, yeah, from Better Call Saul, right? Yeah. This is the guy who loves his Moscow mules. I don't really remember what his name is.
No, me neither. Yeah.
He, like, runs one of the other firms in Better Call Saul, right?
That's correct, yeah. Yeah. It was fun to see him. I don't know his name. I was like, oh, but you're this guy. Yeah.
Yeah. What's his name? Dennis Boutsakaris, Grace, of course. Yeah,
no, there we go. Yeah.
I love seeing that guy. Yeah, I was very creeped out by this person who may or may not have been possessed. It seemingly was about to, like, kind of throw themselves off this upper level of the car park or whatever it was, and folks stop him. They round him up like he did the murder. I didn't think that it was that overtly, like, practical that somebody actually like went into the elevator and cut her throat, though. Then am I like misremembering it? Doesn't the elevator just open and she's there alone and then like her throat's cut?
Yeah, that is correct. Yeah,
so I don't get like what we're even doing with this guy, the whole deal, like the guy who cut her throat, like, oh, we've got him. Like, I was very kind of confused about what we're doing with all of this.
So yeah, also because like Lasher can be a shape changer as well. But there's this Cyprian, this moment, and he brings up again this episode that the elevator has been washed, but the security camera shows somebody going in and this person coming out. So yeah, I don't really get it either. And then the whole thing that he's like, he is possessed, but Lasher chooses like this moment where he's like been caught and sitting down to like essentially like kill him and like break his neck and leave the body. I don't know if they can explain this by the end of it. Cool. It does feel just a little bit messy. I mean, him trying to jump off the balcony that we've heard several times, that people who have been controlled by Lasher have killed themselves, right? I think that's Deirdre's mother.
Yes, that was very much like Deirdre walking off the balcony and getting caught. So I thought Lasher was trying to like body surf this guy into the Talamasca headquarters, right? You remember that old Denzel Washington movie Fallen? Have you ever seen it?
No, but sounds great.
The idea is there is a demon that like leaps from body to body to body, and it's like jumping into different people, and Denzel is the investigator trying to get to the bottom of it, right? So I got the impression like, oh, okay, Lasher has possessed this guy and made a scene, And now they've rounded him up and they've brought him into the Talamasca. And now he's going to have a heart attack. And now that he's dead, Lasher can like wander into the head of like the guy from Better Call Saul.
Does he have a heart attack, or does Lasher break his neck?
Oh, Lasher breaks his neck. Yeah, I'm sorry. There's a loud snapping sound that I was completely overlooking there.
Yeah.
But I thought the whole plan was like to like, you know, kind of steal Dennis Boutsakaris's body.
Okay, that makes sense to me. he doesn't know who the Talamasca are, so he's got to do this trick to get close. I guess that makes sense. That makes sense. That's fine. It's very unclear, but that's fine. I mean, by next episode, probably Albrecht, I think, is the boss's name. I'm sure he'll be possessed and he'll die. So
that's a great name. That speaks to like an old secret of an organization of weird magi. Yeah.
Yeah. So Carlotta tells Rowan about, you know, all the Mayfairs, and, you know, they have the conversation about essentially like Deirdre giving her up, and Ellie is a cousin of the Mayfair. So that's how she was looped in. And Carlotta's going to warn her, like, beware of people who are like talk favorably of Lasher. Like, those people are dangerous and they're lying to you and they don't have your best interest at heart. And then she's going to meet Josephine, who will essentially give her like the other half of this thing about you're the designee and you're the 13th witch and here's all the way you actually own the house. Oh, the key, that's yours. Interesting that we don't know where it is. So we get sort of these exposition dumps, but from the assuming like presumably the feuding sides of the Mayfair family.
Were you excited to meet like these varying factions of the family and get like a little bit of like the exposition that we got?
Yeah, I wanted clarity between what the difference is here between the two sides. Again, it does feel like it took a long time to open the curtain and reveal this information that is kind of what we thought. Like, and not in a way that why wouldn't we learn this way sooner, you know?
Yep, I'm with you. I think there's a little bit of, not to like beat the horse, but like Lost in Translation, as you were saying, in that the book, when it was written at the time, like there was not a ton of other stuff that existed in this space, in this genre of like contemporary supernatural witches, warlocks, wizards, weirdness, right? And it's playing a little bit like on themes that we've dealt with before. There have been a lot of kind of shows like this and stories like this and movies like this between your Harry Potters and your Supernaturals, right? And so it's a little bit of that kind of origin story thing again. Like, I was feeling it, and I'm one to enjoy a slow lingering story, but I was like, I still feel like I don't have enough information about all of them and like clarity about all of them, and like, yeah, we're halfway done and we're only just getting into the like arrive at the weird magic school for lesson one kind of beat of the story, you know.
This would be like if it took until like the fourth movie for Harry Potter to get the Hogwarts.
Get to Hogwarts, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the whole first movie just happens on the train, right? Yeah.
The Dursley's house.
The whole first movie is just with the Dursleys. We didn't even get to station platform.
The end of the first movie is like we got to get away from all the mail. And then but two is all at the cottage.
So we could change the names. Harry Potter and the Flying Mail. Yeah. Harry Potter and Station 9 or Platform 9 and 3/4.
Well, Harry Potter, when he gets on a broomstick, he is a flying mail.
That's got me there.
I am starting to see why the book is like 1,000 pages long, Rich. But you know, it's fun. Cortland's looking for the key, probably, but maybe not. I don't know. He's looking for something, and he ends up finding a pipe. So that's pretty cool. He's got a cool pipe. It was his dad's, and his dad hated him. Trying to make us empathize a little bit with Cortland Mayfair. His dad thought he would blow the whole thing.
He seems like a kind of tortured guy. Always a cool find when you find a random pipe.
Yeah.
Like a little bit of a callback to like all of the best manipulative dudes in the matriarchal witch family have daddy issues episode. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So they're going to head to where like the body is being put in the, what is this called? Like not a mausoleum. Is it called a mausoleum?
I think so. A crypt. Yeah. Is it just a straight up crypt?
A crypt?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh, if I could do a Rob Sestrino crypt keeper, I would.
Oh yeah. I'm not even.
Rowan sees her name written on the crypt. And she's like, oh my God, you told everyone I was dead. That's why everybody's just staring at me. And she's like, oh yeah, you know, it's better for you not to, it's better for everyone to think you're dead than to be alive and know your family.
I love Carlotta's whole response here, like, but you're a doctor. You did great for yourself. Uh-huh. Look how independent you are. You went out and conquered the world. Yeah. You know, all's well that ends well.
Yeah. This is also the moment right before this where Sabrina's like, listen, I know I was going to hang out with you the whole day, but I got to go. Got to take a call and I got to leave. Don't worry. You'll be fine. All these people clearly are like fighting over you, but this should be fine.
My favorite part is that this guy, this whole weird premise, this like magical detective with like witch that he's been tasked with protecting, that we're doing the Kevin Costner bodyguard activities now. And you got her stashed at the house. He's like, oh, sorry, honey, I got to stay late at work, you know? It's just like, oh my God, man, we couldn't come up with like anything better here. You got to go to work. Like, did we already establish your sister? Couldn't there be like a more traditional sitcom family emergency that pulls you away from this? Like, it seems to me like work would understand. I should not leave this highly volatile person in this compromising situation, work.
Work does understand. Albrecht is like, thanks for coming, but your most important job is to take care of Rowan. So you got to go, which is, that does feel like bad news for Albrecht. Albrecht, I think, is going to be possessed and dead by the end of the next episode.
He's really doomed. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So he goes back and then, you know, she goes to the after part. There's a small celebration, no family at the Mayfair house. They'll chat a little bit further, and then Cortland comes in with a party. He wants it to be a celebration of life, so we get all of this. Cyprian is going to end up reading. She finds the necklace in her room. This is so annoying. The whole thing. So okay, it's totally fine because Lasher clearly took the thing off Delphine, goes and put it in the room where she's going to get changed before dinner. And then he goes and how is he doing all of this at one time? I guess he must be very powerful, but isn't the point that he needs to be attached? Someone needs to be attached to the necklace for him to be extremely powerful. For as much as they gave us, there's still a lot that we don't understand. So at some point he steals a necklace off of Delphine because she is dead and then puts it in her room. And then she takes a picture of it and she's like, look at this necklace. And then he's looking through all of the notebooks and is like, oh my God, it's the necklace. But if he just had have stayed with her, he would have seen that all the necklaces were on all the Mayfair things. It's just like, you all, this is, it's too much like, not, there's nothing happening. It's just like the necklace. And then she just gets the necklace and she puts it on.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all that happens. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
No, I'm 100% with you. I'm like very confused about the Lasher dynamic. I know at some point we like learned that he's a shapeshifter, but like, do we know that? Should we know that? Is that like hampering our ability to like run with this thing? I am very unclear as to how he's manipulating stuff. It seems like the necklace is like a device, a conduit for him to possess these witches to get them to do things for him. But meanwhile, he seems like he's operating just fine on his own now that like Deirdre's dead and the necklace is play. Like, how is he moving it? What's going on here? And I did have an issue with like the way she's dealing with the house. Like, Alexandra Daddario, pretty good actress. Like, and there just was a lot of this episode of her wandering through that house with this like dazed, slightly frightened expression on her face that I was like, I don't know, man. I don't know where we're going. You know, we're hanging a lot of weight on just like long, uncertain looks and like illusions. And yeah, where are we going? We haven't really like driven the story forward anywhere.
Carlotta like sees Rowan wearing the necklace and is just like, oh, shucks, better come down for dinner. And so, I guess she's going to like, I guess once she realizes the necklace is on, that's where she's going to like, yeah, I better burn down this whole house. But like, I don't know.
Amidst the darts that I'm throwing here, I will say mad respect to Beth Grant there, who plays Carlotta, because she does like the expression she gives when she looks in the door and then she's literally like, dinner's going to be ready. And her face drops instantly, Grace. She looks like so miserable and put out and upset. And it's like, wow, that's a lot. You just did a lot with a little right there, Beth Grant.
Yeah, I know. Like, so this ending is like Rowan and Carlotta having dinner. She's like, tell me about how my mother died. She's going to start, you know, speaking and essentially like praying to the Lord to protect all of these women. And then Rowan and essentially burn down the house. I think realizing once the necklace is on, like, this whole thing is doomed. This, you know, there's no way to stop Lasher. The only way this all can end is if we just, let's just burn the house down and Rowan and I will die and that's it. But Cyprian will arrive. He'll try to save Rowan. Lasher will close the door and Lasher will whisper in Carlotta's ear that like Rowan is already his. I don't mind the ending. I think the ending is actually like pretty, again, to the Beth Grant of it all, I actually think this is like pretty good. This idea of like, oh my God, this is just doomed. Burn the whole thing down. That to me, I think worked. But yeah,
I like the beat. I like the emotional beat in the scene, right? I like the Beth Grant delivery of the scene and like the hyper religious aunt and the whole like the illusion, the imagery with like the rosary beads and the way Rowan so kind of like eagerly discards them and doesn't even think twice. And then we have like Carlotta flipping out. It just to me is like some of the clumsy TV tropes of like, and then Cyprian comes in and they can get out, but she can't, right? Like Carlotta left behind. Yeah. And like it's not that hard to drag a not particularly powerful and gigantic woman behind you out of the fiery house, you know, like it would have been seemingly easy to like get everyone out alive. And then there was like the weird energy with Cyprian and Rowan of like, we open this the whole episode with Rowan being a little cagey about like, I've told you a lot about myself, I don't know much about you, you're still an enigma. And by the end here we're into this weird like, I don't know, nebulous romantic space of like, don't worry, I'll be there every minute of the funeral, like the door kicking, like hero saving, like she's supposed to be the witch, right? Like she's supposed to be badass. It would have been cool for her to like take some agency, get Carlotta out, or at least like try and have that backfire on her. I don't know, I was left,
we did learn
bit, like,
a little bit of her powers though, Rich, this episode.
Yes, yeah, she can totally autopsy lizards without knives, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So you can see inside them. Not and yep. Didn't kill it. So yeah.
I guess, Grace. I mean, I have bad news, but if you take the right kind of lizard and we hold it up to your window, you can see inside of it too.
There's one extra little beat that I want to talk about, which is this woman Tess. Has she been in an episode before? I can't remember if she was, but
I don't believe so. No.
So she's seemingly like very precocious. She's very like intrigued and her mother's like, stop talking about things, you're embarrassing me. It's like a very like I feel like the reversal of the parent child dynamic. But she mentions that like in Salem, witches have been burned. Which, do you think that was just foreshadowing for the end of the episode, or was that is there something to like keep a tab on for the rest of the season?
Definitely we should be keeping a tab on this. Yeah, I feel like, especially knowing that it's a 1,000-page book, and the way Anne Rice writes, there's probably uh-huh. like more than one antagonist and more than one kind of conflict point. It's the idea of like this trope of witches that we're exploring and the delving back into the past timeline. I feel like that will connect that thread, but like threat of being burned by a bunch of intolerant witch haters seems like we should be clocking that. Yeah. I really like Tessa. This character was very mm-hmm. fun. Like that, this whole little scene of like, I am the precocious social justice warrior who's going to be like super hype that the California doctor showed up in our family.
What does she, her mom says like, don't even get her started on this thing. And she like, is it burning witches or is it something else?
Yeah. She's like, don't even start talking about the burning. And then she's like, wait, the what?
What? Yeah. And she looks at her daughter and daughter's like, you brought it up. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. It's pretty
fun
fantastic.
Writing. Yeah. My bet is now that Rowan is presumably going to be controlled by Lasher. She'll start hopefully be able to use her witch powers more. And then she'll be accused of being a witch. Someone will try to burn her and she'll be able to stop it, or someone will save her or whatever. Yeah, that's my guess.
My prediction is that we're going to see her in the black Spider-Man suit walking down the streets of New Orleans, snapping her fingers to jazz and stuff with like, the slick back hair and the eyeshadow next week. She's pulling the throes of like Dark Rowan. Yeah.
This is embarrassing. What's the monster, the goo monster from Spider-Man that controls you? What's the ambiotic? What is it?
The ambiotic fluid, the goo monster from Spider-Man that controls you. There's the Sandman. What are you talking about? Spider-Man?
Who does this to Peter? What's the thing?
Oh, Venom. You're talking about Venom himself. Venom, the symbiote.
Yeah,
I talked myself out of my own reference race because I was like, wait a minute, that's not the description that I would have used for Phantom at all. But yes, he is a goo monster who controls you when you put him on, when he shows up on the back of your similarly appearing co-worker's moped. Yeah.
So we're saying Mayfair Witches is a Lasher is a goo monster.
Yeah, Venom. It's a Venom. It's a Venom symbiote from space. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else from this episode, Rich? Anything else you want to touch on?
Gosh, I think that's it, Grace. I hope that folks are having fun hanging out with us, having fun with the show. Like, I definitely don't think it's like bad. I'm not hate watching at this point, but I had higher expectations, right? I wanted like a little bit more akin to the kind of fare that we got with Interview. And I think this is just coming in a little lower than that. But it's been fun to watch every week, and I'm curious to see where it's going.
I still think there's a world where like we get it and the last episodes are like really good. And, and you know, even a season two ends up being really good because season one was so setup-y. I think there's potential in this show. I'm not writing it off at this moment.
Agreed.
It's just, I mean, my problem is that it feels wheel spinny because I'm partially intrigued by some of the stuff they drop and then we don't really get anything. That's my issue so far. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, Rich, we'll be back next week with our episode 5 recap. In the meantime, what else do you got going on?
Oh, a bunch of stuff. I'm always streaming tabletop role-playing games, Dungeons & Dragons, with folks like you and the rest of our friends at twitch.tv/DM Philly. I'm at DM Philly on Twitter. My DMs are open if you want to hit me up about any of this stuff and tell me why the book is much better than the show when it comes to Mayfair Witches. I've been talking Vox Machina with Mike Plume. A new podcast feed out there in the works, PSRPGs. We're going to be doing one-shot role-playing adventures, Grace, set in the worlds of the shows that we're watching here on post-show recaps. That may sound confusing. If it does, I implore you, go listen to the preview podcast for that. It's me and Josh hanging out, just kind of explaining the premise of the podcast. I think it's going to be really fun. I'm really excited to bring it to folks in a couple of weeks, episode one proper. That's me. That's what I got going on.
So fun. We're also talking Dark with Ariel, the recap pod. I'm also covering The Last of Us, so the recaps with Mike Bloom, and then Video Game Club with Taryn. Episode 3 is quite tremendous, so excited for people to check out the show and the episode. Push Recaps Theater with Ariel. This week we covered Shotgun Wedding from with J-Lo and Josh Duhamel. And it should be a fun month as movie theaters start to pick back up. Aaron also covering Poker Face. I'm on Twitter at High From Grace. Anything else I'm doing, if I miss anything, I'm sure I did. And we'll be back next week with our episode 5 coverage of The Thrall of Mayfair, which is until next time, double, double, boil in trouble.